This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. 2 years ago yesterday, with September the 11th still fresh in everyone's mind, Congress rushed to approve an anti-terrorism law called the USA Patriot Act. The measure broke down barriers that sometimes prevented information sharing between law enforcement and intelligence, and it expanded the government's powers to monitor, search, and surveil. As the sense of crisis diminished over time, opposition to the Patriot Act has grown. Critics say it gives the government too much power. Its defenders, though, say it's an essential tool in the fight against terror and just as important as ever. The law faces a major turning point. Parts of the Patriot Act expire 2 years from now, so halfway through its term, it's time to revisit the debate between national security and civil liberties. Later in the program, we'll bring you an update on the fires in Southern California and on the bugs blamed for aiding and abetting. But first, the Patriot Act 2 years on. Do you feel safer? Do you think the country's safer under the Act? What do you know about how it's been used? Should the law be modified, and which parts in particular? Give us a call. The number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. In just a few minutes, we'll be speaking with a top official who oversees counterterrorism at the Justice Department. If you have questions for him, you can email those to us now at the same address, totn@npr.org. First, joining us here in Studio 3A is NPR's Larry Abramson. Hi, Larry.
Hi, Neil.
Refresh our memories, Larry. What is the Patriot Act, and remind us of the key provisions?
Well, the Patriot Act is actually a huge law, and a lot of it is not really very controversial at all. Some of it actually provided more funding for the FBI to modernize their computer equipment or allowed them to hire translators more quickly, all of them things that the FBI needed to do for a long time and Congress just put into place. It codified certain crimes that were now going to be viewed acts of terror. For example, crimes against mass transit can be called acts of terror now because of the Patriot Act. But the most important part of the Patriot Act for our purposes are the portions that allowed for easier surveillance of people in the case of terror investigations, that allowed easier access to certain documents by the FBI when they're trying to track down terrorists, and that made it easier for FBI intelligence agents to share information with FBI criminal prosecutors at the Justice Department, I should say, in the case of terrorism. So really, it was a sweeping law that brought more power to bear when it came to terror investigations.
Now, how are these provisions being carried out or not being carried out?
Well, the weird thing about the Patriot Act is it's not really the kind of law where somebody's going to knock on your door and say, I arrest you under the Patriot Act. It's really a law that defines what government's power is and mostly expands that power. And in some cases, I think people would say it just codified the government's power. For example, for years, the government had the authority to do what was called a sneak and peek search. They could search your house if you weren't there and ask a judge, please delay notice of this search to the person who's being searched for a few days, a week, as long as they thought was necessary, so that you wouldn't catch on.
For fear that you might otherwise destroy evidence or flee or something.
Yeah, or you might just scram. And in the case of terrorism, that's obviously a pretty serious concern. Well, what the Patriot Act did is it made it easier for the government to get authority to do this. Some people would say it really just wrote down in law what had been haphazard practice. I think a lot of civil liberties groups would say it made it much easier for the government to do that. So again, it's less a law that you are going to go violate and more a law that is going to explain to the government how they can proceed quickly in a terror investigation to get what they want without having to jump over a bunch of hurdles, which, as we know, helped aggravate the situation before September 11th.
And in some of the wiretap provisions, some argue the Patriot Act was simply catching up with technology.
For years, actually, those of us who covered surveillance in the 1990s during the Clinton administration, there were many efforts by the FBI and even by some not-so-conservative lawmakers to try to advance wiretapping laws so that they caught up with the digital age, as you said, to make sure that you would only have to, for example, sign one search warrant if you were trying to track email transactions or if you were following a cell phone around to different jurisdictions. Some of these things were also codified in the Patriot Act and aren't necessarily directed specifically against terror.
Our phone number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Our email address is TOTN at NPR.org if you have questions about the Patriot Act. And Troy joins us from Iowa City in Iowa.
Yes, I got a question. We'll just say a suspected terrorist makes a phone call to a resident's phone number, and under that, under the Patriot Act, can that number now can be wiretapped, and any person who calls that number can be wiretapped, and any people who call those numbers can also be wiretapped.
So the expanding web is what you're talking about, Troy?
Exactly. So it keeps going and going. We'll just say we'll just call Walmart.
All right, Larry, is that provided for in the law?
Well, I'm not a lawyer. I just play one on the radio. But I think I can say that the government only got the power to tap phones or Internet connections if they were dealing with an agent of a foreign power. There are very specific requirements that the Patriot Act has to deal with. So if it's a standard criminal investigation, there's a pretty serious bar to tapping those wires. But if this person was the agent of a foreign power, then yes, there is expanded power to listen in on that conversation. There are some requirements, however, that only the part of the conversation that is relevant to the investigation be listened to. So I think that there would be some limit, and there are also time limits on all wiretaps.
Oh, okay. What happens, we'll just say a Saudi Arabian oil businessman gives some money to Al-Qaeda. Now, that oil was brought to U.S. employee or from U.S. citizens. Can now all those U.S. citizens' money be taken because their money was brought oil, which brought guns for terrorists?
Anything's possible. I don't think that there's anything specifically in the Patriot Act that would sweep everybody up into that net. I think that
couldn't it?
Well, again, that would be the interesting part to talk about is a lot of laws can be used for a lot of different purposes depending on how aggressive the Justice Department wants to be. And I think that some of the concerns about the Patriot Act have to do with concerns that the Justice Department may be interested in using it as aggressively as possible. So that's, in some cases, that's where the concern comes from.
Troy, I want to move on to give other people a chance.
Okay.
Thanks very much. Let's try James, and James is with us from Ithaca, New York.
Hi.
I
just had a question about the Patriot Act. I was wondering, I had heard that in there somewhere there was a provision or a clause which stated that some of our Freedom of Information Act was going to be taken away, making it almost impossible for anyone to go in and get an actual copy of the Patriot Act itself. How true is that?
There are limitations to the Freedom of Information Act powers in the Patriot Act, and others have been other limitations on FOIA requests have been proposed. But I've never seen a provision that would actually make it impossible to get a piece of the U.S. Code, which is all the Patriot Act is it's just a piece of law that's written into the U.S. Code. I've never seen any provision that would make it impossible to read that. It's online. Anybody can get a hold of it.
Okay, and one last question. Are you familiar with the connection between the Project for the New American Century and some of the things they set forth back in, I guess, 97 and some of the things which are still on their website today, which have to do with things in the Patriot Act that have now been enacted?
I'm familiar with the fact that some people were interested in these ideas before 9/11 happened, and I know some people think that that's a nefarious connection.
All right, we're going to move on now. Joining us from his office in Washington is David Namias, a Deputy Assistant Attorney General. He oversees counterterrorism at the Justice Department, and it's good of you to join us on Talk of the Nation.
Good to be with you.
Are there specific examples that you can give of where the Patriot Act has been used to deter terrorism?
There are some specific examples, and for a lot of examples, I'd point people to our website, lifeandliberty.gov. But I want to point out first that probably the biggest change affected by the Patriot Act was to allow greater information sharing between people like me on the law enforcement side and the intelligence community, as well as the immigration national security communities. Before the Patriot Act, it was as if you were playing football and trying to defend your team by having two separate huddles that weren't allowed to talk to each other. There was this wall that had been created. And after the Patriot Act, that wall has been eliminated, and we are able, only in national security cases involving spies and terrorists, to to share information fairly routinely from the criminal side to the intelligence side and vice versa. And I can tell you from my personal involvement in terrorism investigations since shortly after 9/11, it's just made a world of difference in terms of being able to effectively and efficiently respond to threats. In the old days...
And could you give us an example?
Well, to give you one specific example, the case of Sammy Elirian, who is a former professor in Central Florida under indictment now in the Middle District of Florida in Tampa. For many years, he had been under investigation on the intelligence side, but because of the law, the information could not be efficiently passed to criminal prosecutors. After the Patriot Act and the opportunity to review the information that had been accumulated on the intelligence side, prosecutors were able fairly quickly to return an indictment against him that charges him with being the U.S. head of the Palestinian Islamic Jihad, a designated foreign terrorist organization that's killed hundreds of people, including some Americans. That case would have been very difficult, if not impossible, to bring before the Patriot Act.
As you heard just from the first couple of callers we had, and they're hardly alone, there's a lot of opposition to this law from Democrats and Republicans, liberals and conservatives alike. What do you think makes people so suspicious?
Well, it's hard to tell what makes people so suspicious other than maybe suspicion. What I would say and what I say to people who criticize the Patriot Act is, first, identify the specific provision of the Patriot Act that you say allows whatever you're complaining about. And then let's go actually look at that provision of the Patriot Act and see if it says that, in fact, and more importantly, if there are limitations and oversight built into the provisions. To go to the example, for example, that your first caller called in about whether if a suspected terrorist calls a residence, you can then get a wiretap on everyone who's ever called that resident or even on the person who received the call, the answer is probably not. Under the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, you would have to have probable cause to believe that the person who was called is an agent of a foreign power, including an international terrorist organization. That probable cause would have to be presented not only through a long chain of people, including lawyers at the Justice Department, but to an independent federal judge on the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court. And, frankly, none of that has changed because of the Patriot Act. The law with regard to that is the same as before the Patriot Act as it is today. So, I mean, that's the kind of concern that's out there that I think is, first, limited if you understand how the actual foreign intelligence surveillance laws work, and second, really not affected in particular by the Patriot Act.
There was one famous concern that librarians had, that they would be forced to report on what books were being borrowed by people. And after a great brouhaha, the Attorney General reported that that had never been used. And, you know, a lot of people say, why can't the Justice Department be a little bit more forthcoming with information and maybe people wouldn't be so suspicious?
Well, to speak about that provision for a moment, Section 215 of the Act, what it did is, on the intelligence side of the House, allow a tool that's existed for decades, generations, on the criminal side of the House with regard to grand jury subpoenas, where you can go out in an early part of an investigation and obtain records from organizations that are relevant to an ongoing case. It was amazing to me as a former criminal prosecutor that kind of tool was not available on the intelligence side. And to give you an example of where that might be necessary, even though we have not used it to date, if you had a foreign intelligence service that raided an Al-Qaeda safe house abroad and uncovered a variety of bomb-making equipment and a book checked out from the D.C. Public Library about the construction and maps of the Washington Metro system, you would certainly want to find out who checked out that book. And under the law before the Patriot Act, if the foreign government would not let you declassify the information so you could open a criminal case, you would be limited to going to the library and begging.
David Namias, I'm afraid we're going to have to go now, but thank you very much for your time today. We'll continue our conversation on the Patriot Act in a moment. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking about the USA Patriot Act one day after its second anniversary. Where do we draw the line between national security and civil liberties? If you've been personally affected by the Patriot Act, call and tell us how. 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is TOTN at NPR.org. Our guest is NPR's Larry Abramson. And by the way, I wanted to thank David Namias, Deputy Assistant Attorney General, who oversees counterterrorism at the Justice Department. He was with us just before the break, and we appreciate his taking the time to speak with us today. And Larry, one of the things we didn't get a chance to ask him, are there examples of abuse of the Patriot Act that people are talking about?
Well, I hesitate to say there are none, but there really aren't. Very many. Senator Dianne Feinstein of California was participating in a hearing about the Patriot Act last week. She said she'd received about 30,000 complaints about the Patriot Act. But then when she or her staff read those complaints, in fact, they were actually about other things, detention of immigrants. They were about Patriot II, a discussion brief that was proposed as a possible improvement or addition to the Patriot Act. So in fact, there's a huge amount of confusion about which excesses do or don't apply to the Patriot Act, and there really are few, if any, examples of real excesses. I can quickly point to one, which is we were talking about the sharing of intelligence and criminal information before, and recently the Portland 7 group of alleged terrorists out in Portland, Oregon, pled guilty to aiding and abetting terrorist groups. And some of the information that was gathered under these Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act TAPs, which are easier to get in a terror investigation, were going to be used in the process of the criminal investigation. Those defendants would have had no way of knowing what justification the Justice Department used in order to get those wiretaps. Ordinarily, you would be able to see what the reasonable suspicion was. And that's an example, and the ACLU is trying to bring an action on that basis, of where this secrecy can be brought to bear in criminal trials and make it very difficult for the defendants.
Joining us now from Capitol Hill is Republican Senator Larry Craig of Idaho, along with Democratic Senator Dick Durbin of Illinois. Senator Craig has introduced a bill in the Senate called the Security and Freedom Insured Act, known as the SAFE Act. And Senator, good of you to join us today.
Well, thank you very much. I'm glad you're having this program and this discussion about the Patriots Act.
Well, the SAFE Act would, as I understand it, modify some of the provisions of the Patriot Act.
Well, it would do just that. I think it's first important to say that we, too, have not found any violations of the current administration of the Patriots Act. But what our legislation does is look forward in making sure that there are reasonable firewalls in place to protect the innocent citizen who might get caught up in a broad sweeping investigation and his or her privacy and their lifestyle or whatever disclosed that they would not want. So we have gone in and modified the sneak and peek and brought it back to pre-Patriots levels, which we think is tremendously important. And that simply says that you can sneak and peek if you believe that an endangered that someone is endangered or a life is at risk or that someone might be seeking a flight of prosecution or results in destruction or tampering of evidence, then you have the same flexibility that you had pre-Patriot. But if not, then you don't deserve that kind of wide sweeping authority. Also, John Doe roving wiretaps, we said you just cannot have a carte blanche wiretap across the country. To tap an area and find information, you've got to identify either that the person or the place to be wiretapped, you know that someone is there. You're not just going to put a tap on all information flowing into a given point to protect innocent conversation and all of that kind of thing. Nationwide search warrants, again, we want to sunset that and say that you've got to stop at the local jurisdiction and get a court order to be able to do that kind of wide-sweeping type of thing. So we're building firewalls back to assure that our freedoms as citizens in this country are safeguarded.
Can you take a call with us?
Sure.
Let's go with Kevin, and Kevin's on the line with us from San Francisco.
Hi.
Hi, Kevin. Kevin, I'm afraid your cell phone is breaking up.
I'm sorry.
We're going to have to put you on hold and see if you get a better cell. Let's try on line six. Rebecca's with us from Alexandria, Washington.
Oh, how do you do? Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My primary concern is the lack of the secrecy and the lack of transparency in terms of reporting things to people, such as if they did want to access the library, and if they want the library records of somebody, nobody would learn. And I'm wondering if also, just that's my primary concern, and I'm wondering if that could be discussed, and I'll take my answer off the phone.
Well, thanks for the question, Rebecca. Senator Craig?
The modifications we're talking about as it relates to library searches, our legislation does not touch the expanded definition of business records to include library records, but it reinstates what's known as pre-Patriot standards for seizing those business records. Now, the FBI has to demonstrate, I think, that it has reason to believe that a person to whom the records related is a suspected terrorist or spy. So we protect the library. Now, SAFE Act also exempts libraries from sections of the Patriots Act that allow access to electronic communications on the strength of an administrative subpoena, which is known as the National Security Letter. Now, again, got to have reason to believe and have got to demonstrate it to a federal judge.
So that would limit it in that respect, so requiring more oversight. Though some have said, Congress has not held a lot of hearings about this act since it was enacted, and that it would help if Congress provided a little more oversight.
Well, we've had three hearings. We're going to have two more in the next month. So we are monitoring it. I guess we're not. Can't say we're monitoring on a day-to-day basis, but again, we do monitor it very closely. We've had a lot of calls into our office. We do, as Senator Feinstein does. We check them out. Patriots Act has become the fall person, or the fall law, if you will, for every other thing out there that might happen in immigration or something else. We've not found violations yet, but that does not mean that these kinds of open-ended allowances for law enforcement ought to continue. I believe there was a point in time that we gave our Justice Department the flexibility they needed, and it probably saved American lives. I voted for the Patriots Act, but I voted for it with caution, saying I would go back in and review it. We have reviewed it. That's why we're now making recommendations in the form of law for changes in it. It's got broad bipartisan support, and I think we can get some of these changes made.
Senator Craig, this is Larry Abramson. According to a lot of people, the risk of a terrorist attack is just as great now as it was 2 years ago. Why change now? There's really no reason, it would seem, to roll things back just because we've had 2 years of peace.
Well, I don't believe that in a nationwide search warrant or a John Doe wiretap, that if you're a federal agent and you go to a federal judge and you've got a terrorist problem on your hands, that judge is going to hold you off for 5 or 6 days. He's going to hear you probably in 15 minutes, review your evidence or material, and allow you to move and give you that right. But it is a reasonable safeguard. Are we as vulnerable to terrorist attack? I don't think we are as vulnerable as we were. We've invested a lot. Our lines of communication, our intelligence system is much better. Does it mean the terrorists are out there who want to attack us? Absolutely they are, and we know that. And that's why we've got to remain diligent in all that we do. At the same time, when you give carte blanche sneak and peek as a warrant and you don't care about anybody who gets caught up in it, You're just going to trust your law enforcement to be selective and cautious. I don't think that's where the American people want to go.
Let's get another caller, and this is Beth, who's in Elk River, Minnesota.
Ah, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I love your program.
Thank you.
I guess my question is, and my concern is the definition of terrorism in the Patriot Act. I'm not so sure exactly how clear it is really under the law. And if ultimately the definition does not fall upon, come down to whatever this administration wants to say it is, or whoever they want to say it is, and the checks and balances as far as, you know, what is the criteria to be a terrorist, and is it just whoever the Justice Department, because they want to say they, I mean, I'm just very concerned about this. it's apparent that dissent in our country is truly under attack, and I believe it's under attack by some of the people in this very administration, i.e. the Joseph Wilson case is just... I'm just very concerned that
The Joseph Wilson case is a little far afield when we're talking about the Patriot Act, though it's certainly...
It ties into me.
Okay.
And I want to know exactly what the definition is, or where can I find the definition of what is a terrorist?
Senator Craig?
Who is a terrorist?
Well, we've not changed the definition. What we have changed is the criteria by which you follow what you believe to be a terrorist-type individual or someone who's engaging in terrorist activities. And again, the real test are the safeguards, because definitions will come and go, administrations will come and go. The Wilson case, if there was a true leak and now that's being investigated, that person's already violated a law. And if found guilty, can be prosecuted. So the laws are already in place to protect the Wilsons, doesn't protect the individual who decides they can let their tongue flap over something like that. I mean, you're never protected from that, even though you might put law in place. This is the following of a trail and being willing to cast a wide net versus a selective net based on your justification before a federal judge that this is where you go. And therefore, you've got the checks and balances that are currently in the system. We step back and say, in the pursuit of terrorists, you cannot go much further than you go in the pursuit of drug dealers and drug kingpins. We already have given that authority. It's been in place for 7 years, and no one rose up and said we'd gone too far there. Now they are rising up, and we did go a little further, but not much further. Now we're stepping back to that level and that test.
Here's a final email question for you, Senator. This one from Sheila in San Francisco, in Washington. Attorney General Ashcroft has stated many of the provisions of the Patriot Act have not been used. If in the course of the most comprehensive anti-terrorism efforts in our history these provisions have not been used, then this demonstrates that those provisions are not needed.
Well, I'm not sure I disagree with that. We have had the Justice Department now on two occasions before the Judiciary Committee. We'll have them again in the immediate future, and that very argument has been stated. Well, we haven't used it. We haven't abused it. We haven't used it. Well, if they haven't used it, maybe they don't need it. Now, I'm one of those that's willing to divide the difference based on making sure we put the safeguards in place. Because I don't want terrorists to operate freely in this country. I want them to know that they can be followed, they can be tracked, we can listen to their conversations, we can figure out whether they're good guys or bad guys. And I believe that that's a part of a law enforcement in this country. But at random, without any kind of proving, if you will, or stating the case that your investigation has given you reason to believe, and that's fairly good evidence that you have to provide a federal judge. That's the test.
Senator Larry Craig, thanks very much for being with us today.
Neil, thank you.
Larry Craig is a Republican of Idaho, and he was with us on the phone from his office on Capitol Hill. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And Larry Abramson is still with us, and let's get another caller on. Joseph is with us from Eugene, Oregon.
Hi, Larry.
Hello, how are you?
Very good. And Neil, great to be on your program.
Thank you.
I had a question about the Domestic Security Enhancement Act of 2003. I believe you were saying that we could read some of these, you know, documents, but I have copies, and it says confidential, not for distribution on it. It's a draft from January 9th. And also, most of it's whited out. I have 10 pages of it, but I'd like to know if you've read it and what obviously you have.
Well,
but,
what you're referring
information on it and
yeah, what you're referring to, I think, is called Patriot 2, although it's not.
Yeah, basically, but on the paper it says Domestic Security
right.
Enhancement well, Act, so they want to.
This was a discussion document.
Hold on, Joseph.
This was a discussion document that the Justice Department was passing around earlier this year. It was never introduced as legislation, although that's not to say that the Justice Department wasn't taking it seriously. We don't really know exactly how far they got in their discussions. It was leaked to the press.
Well, who's they? The Congress? Or
I'm sorry?
Who are they in their discussions?
The Justice Department. This is the administration.
Part of that or no?
Well, no, the Justice Department is part of the administration, and Congress would probably receive suggestions from them, as they did with the Patriot Act, and then they made a lot of changes to that.
Oh, okay.
So there's nothing saying that the Patriot II, or the Domestic Security Enhancement Act, as it was officially titled by the press, would
right.
actually be adopted in toto the way it was. I don't know anything about any of it being whited out. I think it was made pretty freely available on...
I have it right here in front of me, and the first few paragraphs are whited out, and then on the first, I have 10 pages of it. And then page three, you have two
right.
paragraphs whited out.
Well, I don't.
So
I,
what is
I don't
the
think
deal?
That that's...
Don't they want Americans to know what they're trying to do?
And this is something, Joseph, you got off a website, right?
Absolutely. It says confidential, not for distribution. I don't remember what website we got it off, and it was the draft from January 9, 2003.
I don't mean to, you know, call into disrepute any website that you may have gotten it off, but
well, it's government. It was a government website, and it says enhancing national security authorities.
Well,
basically, they wanted, like we've heard some stuff about it, they wanted to add more laws to the Patriot Act, which is soon to be re-voted on. Is that correct?
Well, authorization, some parts of the Patriot Act are scheduled to be reauthorized, or they would lapse sunset
unless they're reauthorized, in
2 years' time, and those are some of the hearings that Senator Craig was talking
right.
about.
But
I mean, the Justice Department's
like that?
The Justice Department's version of this...
Joseph, since I don't know what you've got or exactly where you
well,
got it from, I have no idea why it might be whited out.
2003.
Yeah. All right.
The Justice Department's version of this is that these were discussion papers. They have to have discussions about possible changes to the law. We can only surmise when they would have wanted to introduce these changes. Civil liberties groups say that this is an indication of how far the Justice Department would like to go, because Patriot 2 envisions a DNA database for suspected terrorists. It expands the wiretapping provision so that it's easier to listen in on conversations of suspected terrorists. It envisions possible secret arrests. So a lot of things that really raise a lot of concerns with people. And I don't think they wanted the world to know about this until they decided which parts they wanted to adopt. But that's what happened with press leaks. And I'm not sure why some of it's whited out. But if anything, I think most civil liberties groups are glad that some of it did get out, because it ensured that it would be stopped dead in its tracks.
And if I'm not mistaken, there was a provision among the arguments that under certain circumstances you could lose your citizenship.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
So that's one of the most controversial provisions. And again, none of that has been submitted to Congress in the form of a proposed legislation, nor has any hearings been held on it, so far as I know.
Right. Although there are many other pieces of legislation, such as Senator Craig's, that have been proposed that would either roll back parts of the Patriot Act or to strengthen the Patriot Act, although none of them go quite so far as Patriot 2, as it's called.
When we come back from a break, in fact, we will be speaking with one person who does argue that the Patriot Act does not go far enough, and we'll take more of your phone calls at 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. Larry Abramson, very good of you to be with us this afternoon.
Thank you, Neil.
NPR correspondent Larry Abramson, who's been covering the Patriot Act in all of its various forms. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. A bit later, we're going to be talking about the scourge of the pine bark beetle and its devastating consequences for Southern California. If you have had to deal with this pest or the fires that result, give us a phone call. Our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. But before that, we're going to return to our discussion about the Patriot Act and how it's been working during the past 2 years. Still with us, I said goodbye prematurely, is NPR's Larry Abramson. And joining us now from his office is in Chicago is John Yu, a visiting professor at the University of Chicago Law School. And thanks very much for being with us.
Oh, sure. My pleasure.
How far does the government need to go to protect the country from terrorist acts? In other words, do you think the Patriot Act goes far enough?
Well, I think the problem is that we can't really know what Al-Qaeda is going to do next. One thing that we learned about them as an organization is that they respond very quickly to law enforcement and intelligence methods that we use to try to stop them and to try to gain more information about them. And so they respond. They will shut down communication channels that we think that we were able to get at if they hear in public that we are able to tap into them. And so the problem with the Patriot Act is the Patriot Act, in a way, fights the last war. What we need to worry about is what the next war is going to look like. And so the Patriot Act is designed to get at the things that we saw them do leading up to September 11th. The concern is that the Patriot Act may not be good enough for the things they try next.
So, in other words, you think it's fighting the last war, effectively.
Yes, exactly.
How does this compare? Some people have drawn comparisons to Abraham Lincoln during the Civil War and suspension of habeas corpus and that sort of thing, and say maybe the Patriot Act is not outside the realms of the American experience.
I'm glad you raised it. I think one thing that we forget is that in wartime, the courts have tolerated much more active government regulations, searches and seizures, detention, than we see here with the Patriot Act. For example, as you said, Abraham Lincoln suspended the writ of habeas corpus, detained thousands of American citizens, and subjected them to military commission trial. In this current conflict, the United States has done that with two citizens, and none of them have been subjected to military commissions. In fact, President Bush's order on military commissions doesn't apply to citizens. Contrast that also with President Franklin Delano Roosevelt. He also used military commissions on U.S. citizens immediately. As soon as he issued an order, they were used on American citizens. Again, in this case, that hasn't happened. The other thing I'd point out in the area of surveillance, which is the Patriot Act area, the courts and the executive branch over many years have identified much broader powers for the government in terms of surveillance and searches in wartime and national security emergencies than the Patriot Act itself authorizes. So there's much more space for government action if that were the case, if Congress and the President wanted to do that. But instead, they've chosen to restrain themselves so far.
Given the fact that some measures of the Patriot Act have not been apparently used by the Attorney General, some people say, you know, look, if they're not being used, maybe they're not needed. What parts or what aspects of this kind of law do you think need to be strengthened or developed further?
Well, certainly, one area where the Constitution and lower courts have identified as an area where the government is allowed to do more is in the area of surveillance. For example, before the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, the Justice Department used to engage in searches and surveillance of spies without any warrant at all. And you can see some of the movement towards that kind of system in some of the most recent proposals. So, for example, President Bush suggested on September 11th, 2003, that the Justice Department and the FBI be able to request information from business record holders and stuff without getting a warrant in the first place as an administrative procedure. Now, the Constitution and lower courts have said that's permissible, but so far the Patriot Act still requires all these things, even searches of library computers and borrowing records, all have to be presented to a judge before the search occurs, and the judge has to find probable cause there. That's not a system that the Constitution requires. That's a system that the political branches have chosen to restrain themselves with. But there's more space for the branches to go if they wanted to do more.
Thanks very much for being with us.
Okay, thank you.
John Yu is a visiting scholar at the American Enterprise Institute. We reached him by phone from his office in Chicago. And Larry, before we leave, what is the schedule for hearings on the next phase of hearings on the Patriot Act?
There are going to be continued hearings in the Judiciary Committees, in the Senate, and possibly in the House. As we mentioned, there have been a number of pieces of legislation introduced. Their fate, I think, is very uncertain because even though there are many critics of the Patriot Act, I think there are a lot of people who don't necessarily want to stick their neck out and roll back police powers at this particular point in time. There are many Republicans who want to restrict the use of the Patriot Act and make some changes. But I haven't seen what you'd call a steamroller of support behind these kinds of things. It's also not the kind of thing that you haul out in an election year and say that you basically want to tie the FBI's hands. It'll be interesting to see how all of this plays out in the election and if any of the Democrats in particular, decide to make a really big issue out of it.
Could change if specific abuses come to light, though.
That's absolutely true.
NPR's Larry Abramson, thanks very much.
Thank you.